Tonight on Oh My Liver, a tale of betrayal, confusion, and moisturized elbows. Cirrhosis may be chronic, but our coping mechanisms are chaotic.
Is it jaundice or just bad lighting?
Oh, is it brain fog or just forgetting my Netflix password?
These are
sweet emotions.
Welcome to the newly renovated Rico's Pool Hall Tattoo Parlor and Liver Lounge. I'm Will Green.
And I'm D. Scott Graham.
And we thank you for joining us today on Oh My Liver,
a podcast about friendship, cirrhosis, and everything in between. We're in this together. Welcome to Symptom Spiral Theater, coming to you from Rico's Pool Hall and Liver Lounge, where symptoms meet melodrama. Scene 1, The Itch.
I scratched my elbow, and immediately I Googled cirrhosis, rash, terminal. It turns out I have 6 hours to live and should write a will. A very short one.
You're not dying. You're dry. Apply lotion and stop consulting WebMD like it's a Ouija board.
Oh, I think I was quite fabulous.
Oh, that was funny. Yes, you were. You were quite good.
Hey, laughter is the best medicine.
You know, it truly is. And so everybody, thanks for joining us for this episode. As you can tell already, we're trying some new things as we venture further into our show. And so we decided this week to give a shot at some sort of setup bits, little comic things, little takeoff send-ups. And we're going to hear those all through the episode, this episode. And we thought it'd be kind of fun to set up our talking points and our conversations with those small little kind of things. So, you know, if you like them and stuff, let us know. Hopefully you will, because we like doing them. And so what we're talking about this week is emotional health, mental health. And, you know, mental health in the world today is really a struggle. Just regular, but in daily life. But for someone with chronic illness, like Will and I, we have cirrhosis, it takes on sort of a different thing. And, you know, I've said to people, Will and I have had this conversation where it's a cliche, but there's truth in it that looking at your own mortality, you know, sort of looking that square in the face gives you a different perspective. And, you know, that's something that can be overwhelming if you let it. And so we're going to talk a little bit about this week about how we're kind of dealing with a lot of that stuff. Now, going on with that too, unfortunately, really, cirrhosis actually causes hormonal shifts and things to happen in our bodies, which also cause cognitive and depression and confusion and this and that and the other thing. So the cirrhosis actually physiologically affects our psychology as well as just sort of emotionally dealing with having a chronic illness. And of course, one of the biggest for us, really in general, one of the bigger symptoms in general is confusion, sort of cognitive issues. You forget things, you forget where you are. And this is it's called heptic encephaly. It's a because of the toxins. Your liver is, of course, a filter, and it typically would filter all those toxins out of your body, and the ammonia and all those various different things that you need to get filtered out of your body. And when it's not working properly, they can, of course, end up staying in your body, and they can get to the brain, and that can cause really some pretty big issues. Honestly, it can even get dangerous. You know, I've told people around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you have, Will, as well, told folks that if I start, you know, just talking like utter, complete nonsense, call 911 because I am probably not well. And so, you know, it ends up leading to, and then the lesser side of that is, you know, you just get confused, you forget things, you forget where you are, you have to kind of, you know, end up writing things down a lot. I'm now forever making lists way more than I used to, because I just keeping it all straight in my head. As a matter of fact, Will, you have a story, right? I remember you told me about something in a restaurant where you,
Oh yeah. So there's a Chinese restaurant, and boy, do I love Chinese buffet. I used to be a bigger, fatter boy because a lot of Chinese buffet, but been in this Chinese buffet restaurant at least 200 times, if not more. And I got up to go to the buffet, and I got my food, and I turned around. I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know where my table was. I didn't know where any of that was. And luckily, there was a nice little Chinese waitress. Immediately grabbed my arm, saw what was going on immediately, grabbed my arm, and she said, "No, sir, your table's right here," and led me to my table.
Thank God for now, people like that.
Yeah, I also want to add in a little thing. I used to think before I was diagnosed with this that I was actually coming down with dementia or something because I truly was not able to remember things, you know?
Totally.
So I'm like, keep an eye on me because something's going on. And now I know it's the cirrhosis.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I always forget. This is something I'm going to put out there. I keep forgetting to turn the car off. That's my almost daily thing because it's a push button ignition and the car's really quiet. I'll get it in gear and everything and then notice that I've gone in doing what I had to come out and the car's still running.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all kinds of stuff like that. You know, for me, I notice when I'm cooking. Like, I swear to God, it's like almost every single time I cook, every single recipe, I forget at least one ingredient as I'm through the course of cooking. And sometimes, I think I told you, Will, sometimes I won't even remember it until, you know, like it's done. I'm about to eat it and be like, oh, I didn't put the tomatoes in it or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And like last week, you know, there's it's election season now, of course, and you know, we have early voting, and so I wanted to go vote. And last week, there was one day I was working from home, and I'm like, okay, today I'm going to go vote. It'll be easy. I can do it as at lunch or something. And end of the day came, and it was past the time when the polling place had closed, and had completely forgotten. And I was like, wow.
Those shoes look phenomenal.
Right. That's what I'm talking about, you know?
Oh. One does get easily distracted.
Yes. You that's another thing too, is just something sometimes as simple as like the corner of your vision. You'll be trying to talk to somebody and it just like really pulls you away. And, you know, I mean, in all fairness, I've traditionally would, you know, I have a little touch of distractiveness myself, you know, just in general in life, always have, but it's a lot worse with the cirrhosis. It really, really, really is. And of course, all of this, as the toxins and the stuff builds up, it can cause personality changes. You can get irritable. You can get, it just sort of affects your mood in general. You just kind of feel blah sometimes. I don't know about you, Will, but I do. There's many days to where it's just like, I don't even feel like watching a TV show or whatever. It's just like kind of very, I don't know how to describe it. Just blah, really.
Yeah. My attention is like totally like not there anymore. I used to love to read,
mm-hmm.
but there are a lot of books I picked up to read and I get to page 2, page 3, and I have no interest to read. I have no interest to watch television. Spent almost a month in the hospital a little while back, and man, I didn't even turn the television on.
Yeah.
Other than they let you order your food on the television. That is the only time I turned on the television in the entire month that I was in the hospital. And then they put me on some crazy diet. So it was real easy to order dinner and breakfast and lunch.
Right.
But yeah, there's no interest. There's no, like there used to be.
Exactly. It's a domino effect that then ends up affecting your mood. You know, you get depressed about the fact that why am I feeling so blah? And so I just, you know, and you kind of get hard on yourself and get down on yourself. And that's when I find I start to get irritable. I start to, you know, and it affects everything. I mean, you know, I try to be aware of it. You know, both Will and I do. Honestly, Will and I, you and I, we've had a little bit of I don't want to necessarily say conflict or whatever, but you know, a little bit of fisticuffs. Yes, verbal fisticuffs, where we've had, yeah, and it's when I look back at it, I realize, oh, we were kind of in the thick of that. And you and I, we kind of get double dosed because we're both dealing with it.
Yeah. But we both have come to realize since being sick, being angry with somebody and holding a grudge, it's not worth it.
No.
For me, absolutely. I will tell you how I handled the situation with Scott is I just hung. I said, I will talk to you tomorrow. And I hung up because I knew that my emotions would take over and I would say something angry and cruel and mean and not mean it. And then the next morning we pick up the phone, we talk and everything, you know, this is the concern I had. Well, this is the concern I had.
We talk through it. We're able to actually listen to each other, get each other's perspective. Whereas in the thick of it all, it's really hard to do that. And what you did was exactly perfect. It is awesome to be able to have a friend who, you know, that when something happens and we get in the thick of it, it's like we can handle it. You know, it doesn't mean that things don't happen, that, you know, conflict doesn't come up or whatever, but that we are strong enough friends, strong enough people that we can handle and deal with it.
I want to add an addendum onto this. Mm-hmm. For y'all out there who don't know, I am ADHD positive. Basically have been since I was 5, but was only diagnosed about 2 years ago.
Right, and you are under treatment, medication, all that stuff now everything.
For all of that. My thing is, when an ADHD person, and we're not all the same, talks, we may not be talking in a language or words that people can put together and understand what we're saying. Mm-hmm. But since I have been a couple of years ago with the ADHD, I know how I need to be talked to now. So, you know, I go, hey, listen, I'm not trying to whatever. I'm trying to find out answers. I'm trying to find out this. I'm not angry. I'm not upset. And I know you're getting frustrated with me for the way that I'm acting. And this is a lot of people in my life. you know.
Sure,
but
sure, yeah, just, totally.
If you have ADHD and all this going on, you need to come up with a way that you can talk to people and say, hey, this is what I'm hearing, and this is what I need to hear. And somebody will go, well, you're just not listening. I am listening. I just can't understand what you're saying because you're not speaking to me.
Right. It's not processing in a way that I can deal with it.
Exactly. And it's even harder with the cirrhosis. You go to a doctor, you go to, you know, whatever. And sometimes the doctors don't understand what you're trying to say because they may not be specialists in that field and all of that. But yeah.
And so, sometimes even if they are.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
We're all in this together, people.
Yes, yes. So, you know, there's...
I didn't
it can get kind of thick. I'm sorry, Will, what was that?
I said, I hope I didn't swing that too far off subject.
Oh, not at all, not at all. As a matter of fact, you're right on point, right on point. So... The point really of all this being is it ends up kind of... It can really add up to a lot. And, you know... And we haven't even really gotten through everything. I mean, you know, motor impairments can end up happening. I don't know if you've experienced these yet, Will, but I have where...
My legs are starting to get... Yes. I get the neuropathy a bit in my hands sometimes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then I'm getting like, I don't know, a sharp pain. Not so much a muscle cramp, but every so often a sharp pain in my legs.
Yeah, I get like they're... sharp pains. I don't know if I just describe it necessarily as a cramp. I call it a spasm because the muscle feels like it's contracting and sort of doing, you know,
mentioned this before. Not every case of cirrhosis or end-stage liver is the same.
As a matter of fact, they're all entirely different. The way it affects the bodies.
Muscle cramps. I have ascites. Is that
right? I had the ascites, and I'm keeping mine pretty well managed right now with the...
all out of control.
Yeah.
And what that is fluid in your abdomen. Right now, it's not so much in my abdomen. It's getting behind my lungs. So I have to have around my lungs drained, my belly drained, you know. But it's not the same. You may have symptoms of anything. And it's not going to be like the same as somebody with, say, heart disease. If you have heart disease, then you're not all going to be the same.
Exactly.
You know,
and the treatments and the things that you do are different and this and that and the other thing. I get like spasms in my legs, sometimes in my back. I get them in my hands. I'll get twitchies in my arm. You know, sometimes my arm will just...
Twitchies. You said twitchies.
Twitchy. I've always been a little twitchy fuck anyway, you know.
I'm to the best of us.
Yeah, I'm kind of frenetic and you know, don't sit still a lot just as a natural state of being. So it's sleep disturbances. I know I've experienced it to the point to where I have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep or waking up. And I, to this point, have not, it really can happen where people's schedules get reversed. To this point, I haven't had that happen, but Will, I think it's kind of happened to you a little bit where...
Oh yeah, I'm a night owl.
Yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
You know, I don't know if that's the disease or the fact that I'm an actor and
you're just a night owl, but to begin with.
Yeah, and right now in my life, there's a lot going on, so I could take all my meds that are supposed to help me sleep and everything, and my mind will race to the ends of the earth, and I won't get to sleep for 5 or 6 more hours, even though I'm tired and I'm sleepy. And then I end up sleeping. By some chance, I fall asleep, and then I toss and turn and all of that.
Yeah, yeah. And for me, what I end up doing is I end up distracting myself with ridiculous things and then spending way too much time doing those ridiculous things. Like the other day, I was making a list to go to the grocery store and needed a few spices and didn't want to duplicate what we already had in the rack or in the cabinet, and was looking through the spice cabinet and was, it's all disorganized and things were everywhere. And I got frustrated and annoyed with it. And so I just took everything out and completely cleaned it out, threw a bunch of stuff away and organized it. It took me like 2 hours. It was ridiculous. I should not have spent that time doing that. And there was, you know, like, I wouldn't have done that, I don't think, before I got sick. You know, I would have caught myself and been like, you know, don't do this now. You know, this is needs to be done, sure, whatever, but now is not the time. So, yeah, it can mess with your sleep. And then, of course, just dealing with it, you know, again, like I said, and this is, you know, Will was talking about liver disease all being different and the symptoms manifesting themselves differently, and they do, certainly, but... you know, with other diseases, you also deal with depression and anxiety. You know, if you have, Will had mentioned heart disease, or if you have cancer, or if you have anything, you know, other sort of big chronic illness, you're going to deal with depression, anxiety, stress, fear, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And for us, I know for me, I have to pay attention to not letting that affect my notion of treatment, and sort of keeping myself on track. Because I know that I can, if I let it, I would just stop doing things because I don't feel very good and I'm kind of depressed and I'm worried about things. And so it's just easier to not have to do the things that are better for me. Yeah, I don't know if you find that to be the case, Will, but I do, where I, you know, and it's effort. I have to make the effort to keep myself from sliding there.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it just sneaks up on you.
Yes.
When I got out of the hospital, the night I got home, I think I was talking to you, and mm-hmm. I hung up from mm-hmm. you, and I played a small game on my computer. And no sooner had I closed the computer that I started shaking and crying uncontrollably, and have never been so scared or full of fear in my life. Now, it's the only time it has ever happened in my life, you know. Mm-hmm. I've been mm-hmm. prone to panic attacks, and I've been all of that. But this just scared me, and I didn't know who to talk to. Now, I'm not a religious man. I'm very spiritual, though, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
and my
me too.
Mom is always, my mom was my guiding light. You know, we don't know what's out there, but, you know, we're told that there's somewhere better for us than here. And I've used that as a guiding light.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
what can I do here before I go there? And that night, I really just couldn't stop shaking or crying. And I was in a fetal position. And finally, my sister lives with me. So I called up front to speak to her, and bless her heart, that's not one of her strong suits, is, you know, she loves me and we get along great, but comforting is not her strong suit. And I don't blame her, you know. We both had lots of tragedy in our lives, but she actually sort of slipped into it. And about 20 minutes later, I was sound asleep because my sister was there to comfort me and tell me that everything was going to be all right. But that is the only time in my life that that's ever happened. That is the most feared and scared. And I don't know what brought it on. It just occurred.
Yeah. And it's crazy. And it, you know, the thing is like there's stuff that starts to happen that you don't even really realize at first. All the social implications, because frankly, I don't know if you found this, Will, there's a little bit of stigma around cirrhosis. Everyone just assumes that I was an alcoholic, You know, they're like, exactly.
In fact, excuse me. When I first went to my doctor and my gastroenterologist, they both said I had alcohol cirrhosis.
Right.
You know, I don't know what causes. I will admit when I was younger, I drank. So like the last 10, 15 years, my angle has come down on the amount of beer I drank.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
So to the point now that I don't drink at all. I don't know what causes, but I think mine is hereditary.
Yeah, I mean, yes, mine is absolutely. I mean, my doctor has had specific conversations with me now about, like, you know, the bulk of most of what I'm dealing with is genetic and hereditary, you know.
My dad had some liver disease before he passed away. Though he passed away from complications from diabetes, he had jaundice and he had, you know.
Right. Well, and some of that may have been results of the liver disease. So it's.
Yeah, and I'm sharing some more. TMI. Woohoo, here we go.
No,
One of my other sisters.
We're okay with that.
I had five sisters. Four of them were gone. One of them passed away a year ago of the same exact thing Scott and I are going through now. She was older than I am by about 10 years, but she decided to give in. And she decided to give up. And I absolutely, positively refuse to do that.
Amen, brother.
I've got friends. I've got people that love me to the ends of the earth. I have people I call my angels that are always checking on me. What do you need? What do you need? What's going on here? You know?
Totally.
So, yes. But I won't give up. And hopefully anybody out here listening won't give up. You are loved. You are appreciated. And we are always here.
Yes, we are. And it's funny. Look for that in your life. You know, this is one of the things that I've discovered, too, is look for those positive influences, those supportive folks. Seek them out and surround yourself with them, because, you know, honestly, that's what we need in life, period, is folks that are. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they let us get away with stuff or that they empower us to make bad decisions. As a matter of fact, it's really quite the opposite. They really talk with us and communicate with us and support us in a way to help us make decisions. And, you know, the roles, of course, are reversed. It's a two-way street to, you know, try to live your best life and to surround yourself with folks that are just going to remind you of what you have not accomplished as opposed to what you have accomplished.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
We'll do the things to help support you try to do the work that it takes. And sometimes doing the things that are healthy for us, that are good for us, they're not easy. It's not easy to do, you know? Sometimes it's like all the self-care, all the self-help, you know, doing work and therapy. Frankly, like for me, my diet, the way I'm eating right now, it's a lot of work. I have to plan my meals and keep them cooked, and because I really have to cook entirely for myself to be able to do what I need to do. And so it would be way easier to not take care of myself and just eat in a different way, but I have to work at it and I have to remind myself that it's worth it. And even though it's hard, and so those are things that, you know, we find ourselves in the midst of. So anyway, That was quite a journey we've been doing here, Will. I think, you know, we've gone from the dark, flaky elbows to panic of yet another new symptom. And And we try not to fixate on that goofy crap that's happening in our bodies, you know. But
no, that's why we bring the goofy crap onto the podcast.
Exactly. And with that in mind, now, dear listeners, it's time for us to dim the lights once again, and we will cue the lute and step right into the spotlight of absurdity and emotion. So prepare yourself for another installment of Symptom Spiral Theater.
scene two,
The Fog.
I walked into the kitchen and forgot why. And then I stared at a spoon for 12 minutes. I think I'm becoming a spoon.
Or, now just hear me out, dude. You're just tired. You don't need a neurologist. You need a nap.
Man, we get better and better.
You know it. You know it. All right. Well, as you can see, you know, it is a lot. We deal with a lot of things, and there's a lot of shared systems in our body with the liver that affect things. You know, pathways, systematic inflammation. Will had mentioned the ascites that can displace organs. When I was dealing with the ascites before I kind of was able to get it managed with the spironolactone and the spironolactone, it was literally sort of squishing my intestines together.
It got my kidneys.
Yes.
First time I went in there, I was diagnosed with acute kidney injury because I had so much. That much fluid was sitting on my kidneys.
Right, had actually bruised or whatever your kidney, yeah.
Oh, yeah, because one time I went in, they took out 12 liters of fluid out of my gut. And a week later, they took another 12 liters. And then it sort of moved up to my back. So I really don't get the one for the stomach very often. But the one for the back, I can only get 1 liter a day out.
Right.
And right now that's causing me some discomfort.
That shifting thing that's happening with you, Will, is actually a good point. I didn't even think about that until you just said it, which is the notion of, you know, you got to kind of be open and flexible because this shit changes, you know, like our symptoms, you know, fluctuate from sometimes from day to day, but certainly as the disease progresses, as the symptoms change, sometimes get worse, sometimes get better, sometimes change entirely to a whole new symptom.
But they're going to change.
Yes.
That's a given.
That's the only thing that's for sure is that everything is unsure.
Amen, brother.
Yeah. Because, you know, this affects hormones, neurotransmitters in the brain, all of that, which, of course, affects mood and the cognitive issues we were talking about before, that sort of stuff. And so, you know, with that notion of kind of sliding yourself and being able to adapt, like there's stuff that I know I've started to do, Will, that I'm sure you do as well, like, you know, when I do have a good day, I try to recognize it as early as I can in the day and be like, okay, I have to take advantage of a good day, you know,
because
I
don't. Amen.
Yeah. The one thing you can count on is that nothing is going to be the same. And so you have to then get yourself into a mental mindset of being able to accept and deal with change.
Because it's going to run over your butt like a steamroller.
Yes. And part of that then becomes being willing to give yourself the space to know that you're dealing with it. So, you know, the sort of popular phrase these days is offer yourself grace, give yourself some grace. You know, you have to know that you're working, you know, and Will and I, we try to support each other as best we can through this sort of stuff is like, we're doing the best we can. And sometimes from the outside, it might not look like it, but that doesn't mean that that's not the case.
Can I add a little analogy in here?
Please do.
Do you remember who the founder of Taoism was?
Lao Tzu.
Lao Tzu. Okay. Well, a follower of Buddha, three of them were walking down past a raging river and they needed to get across. but they knew that it would crush them. So a follower of Dao, I'll just say Dao because I can't remember the name, they look over and he's floating down the river. So they walk along the pathway and he's climbing out of the river and drying himself off and everything. And the subjects of the disciples of Buddha go, wait a minute, how did you do that? That river should have crushed you. And the Taoist said, I didn't fight it. I didn't fight the current. So that's kind of a philosophy in my head. I know Scott has somewhat of the same thing.
Yes, I very much consider myself a Taoist.
And I know this sort of sounds direct and but don't fight it. It's not going to do you any good. It's going to cause you more pain.
Exactly.
Do what you can do to solve it, but don't fight it.
Exactly. I was about to say, Will, that's an excellent point, that just because you're accepting it and not fighting it doesn't mean that you're happy about it or that you are allowing it necessarily to continue or that you're not going to evaluate it and look at trying to solve it or whatever the issue might be, because, you know, that's healthy and that's good. But being frustrated by it, fighting it, trying to push back against it, all those things, it just, honestly, you'll be able to get to dealing with it for real quicker and healthier by not fighting it. I've found that to be the case.
And me too.
That openness and willingness and flexibility.
Oh,
yeah. You know, honestly, yeah, it's important in life, period. But we forget it. You know, it's easy to get caught up in life and stuff. And like I said, this is part of what I meant when I said that, like, looking at your own mortality changes your perspective. Is this is one of the things that I've started to really realize, is this very thing right here. Is that, you know, I, so many times I'm working against myself and not presenting and not giving myself the right setup to be successful. And that just
you're
comes from
against yourself, not for yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's an important thing. And like I said, we can, in daily life, is your living life regular, just going through things, it's easy to forget. And you know, things happen to us along the way. It's not always necessarily even necessarily a chronic illness. It can just be a life event, you know, somebody you meet or somebody that's close with you that passes away, or somebody moves away that has that you've been really close with and now you can't see them every day. Or, you know, there's all kinds of things that can cause this same kind of, I don't want to necessarily say trauma, but I guess trauma that causes you to stop and really examine your life and think about these perspectives.
I wouldn't call it trauma.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, it's
something more like an obstacle or a concern.
Right. I mean, I guess mental health professionals, sometimes they'll refer to these things as trauma. But yes,
trauma's busting your head open and getting 30 stitches in your head. To
right,
me.
Well.
Because that's what happened to me. Sorry.
Right, right. I mean, that's certainly physical trauma, without a doubt. Yeah. We end up dealing with a lot of stuff. I think we've talked already about, like, just honestly, in the past month, I've felt this a lot more. Just generally tired, kind of, you know. And it goes through the day with me. Like, there'll be sometimes in the middle of the day, I'll just suddenly, like, hit a wall and feel totally, like, run down for, like, half an hour, 45 minutes. And if I'm at a place where I can kind of get myself and not necessarily take a nap or whatever, but, you know, just relax, kind of zone out for a minute, really turn my brain completely off.
I have a confession to make.
Yeah.
This episode really should have come out a while back, but because of what Scott just said, like for me, the general fatigue and the tired randomly for no reason has kept us from recording when we should be recording. But there have been days that I personally could not keep my head up and all of that.
Yes. Yes.
This should have come out a couple of weeks ago, but it got me.
Right.
Cirrhosis got me.
Gotcha. Well, and I, you know, to that point, honestly, well, it's probably a good time. It's a good little segue into mentioning that we're going to try to do these as regular as we can, you know, once a week, once every couple weeks, whatever kinds of things, so that we're staying up with people and having a pretty consistent kind of conversation. But we do ask for your grace with us a little bit, and knowing that if it is a little longer sometimes, that's probably what's happening, is that one or both of us, honestly, are dealing with life with a chronic illness, and it can really get in the way.
Yeah. For this one, I'm taking the rap for, though, so.
Well, I feel you. And the thing is it's not like I don't have those issues. I do all the time. And, you know, you are not working now, unfortunately. I am still working full time. And so, you know, I'm a media director, and I deal with this kind of stuff at work, you know, all the time. I'm... You know, I call cameras, so I'm calling shots. I'm directing camera guys to give me this shot, a close-up of this person, a wide shot of this, or whatever. And I will sometimes, you know, when I have 3, 4, 5 cameras, I sometimes will forget which one I'm on. And, you know, the camera guys are all, my crew is, they all know, of course, that I'm ill and have chronic issues and are very supportive. But they'll be like, which camera are you on? Fortunately, a lot of times we have lights on the cameras. So even if I say it wrong, when I tell them wrong, they've actually done that too. They've come back to me and been like, no, actually you're on camera 2, not camera 1. So,
I've started having to write down things in my calendar, which as an actor, my mind is, not that I do much acting anymore, but my
at
mind.
At the moment, yeah.
Well, yeah, get through this, hopefully, knock on wood. But that's my car. That's my office. That's my job. That's my all of that. And now, you know, I'm got appointments coming up, and I could usually remember all of them. Nope, calendar's packed.
Yeah. And I'm the same way. I got to put stuff on the calendar. Like I said, I've started making lists. I use a to-do list almost every day. My calendar with, at the studio at work, I end up having multiple productions a day sometimes. So I'll have those on the calendar laid out with the times so that I can see where things are. And like Will has said, I mean, this can be a little frightening. It's a little daunting and kind of scary if you let it be, sort of realizing that you're in the midst of all of this stuff.
I was sitting on my bed eating a cracker or a cookie or something. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden my gut felt like a cinder block.
Mm.
So I made an appointment, went and saw my GP, and he says, oh, you have alcoholic cirrhosis. I don't know where in the world he got the alcohol from, because he didn't really do any tests. Yeah. But so that's when I found out I had it.
Yeah.
Though I think it'd been coming on for a while, and I thought the symptoms were something else. Yeah. So laying on my bed with a cinder block in my stomach.
Yep.
Good time.
Man.
Good time.
Yeah, that cinder block in your stomach. That's a good way to describe it, Will. I'm sorry, what was that, Will?
I said, I'm going to have to lay off the cinder blocks. They're a little too crunchy.
A little too much fiber in them. what I was saying is that's actually a good description of, like, because my a lot of my symptoms right now, at least, are gastrointestinally kind of based. It's where I'm dealing with a bulk of the problems and the disruptions and stuff that I'm dealing with is in my gastrointestinal system. And that's a good description many times about, like, kind of what it feels like is like a cinder block or a brick. It's just like this heavy ugh in the in your gut. And it can get honestly really even painful. This past week too, I've started having like this feeling of like I'm just kind of disconnected from myself. It's almost kind of like I'm watching myself, you know, as opposed to actually participating in my life. And that's and what's even weirder is I've realized it while it's happening. Like I'm in the middle of it and I'm like, I don't feel right now. I don't feel and so it's a goofy kind of feeling. But, you know, we're moving through and trying to keep our perspective and trying to grow and not just as, you know, with through the disease and that kind of thing. But, you know, for me, and I know this is true for you, Will, because I see you doing it. I growing as people, trying to.
Yes.
You know. Not let this make me a worse person, but actually help make me a better person. I see it. I'm trying to see it more as an opportunity than
I'm a more of a. See, that's the thing with me. I am an empath. I am a high empath. So a lot of times, like me having liver disease, if it meant that I had to, and please, the people don't take this the wrong way. But if it meant I had to die to save somebody else, I would do it. So, sure. You know.
Yeah.
That's one reason we're here is because everybody's welcome.
Right. And we recognize these things in ourselves, exactly. And kind of feel it's important to talk about it, give a platform to it and, you know. Like we said, cirrhosis kind of comes with this stigma, you know. Somebody actually said once early in my diagnosis, actually said, they were like, oh, I didn't know you could get that and not be an alcoholic. And yes, honestly, genetics seems like for a larger portion than not ends up playing a factor. Like any chronic illness, you have to take it, learn from it, and grow. Okay, with that, let's move on to the daytime soap segment of our program here, where we'll discuss how all this can, we'll continue to discuss, really, how all this can affect mood and help us, and how we have started using really humor. To get us through. But first, before we do that, if you'll bear with me here, Will, listen to this message. Keep your perspective. Not everything is life and death. And keep your sense of humor. It really does help. Remember, not every symptom is a Shakespearean tragedy, but, you know, if you're worried, talk to a real doctor, not your inner drama coach. Welcome to As the Liver Turns, where the emotions are big and the triggers are, well, surprisingly small.
Yeah, itty-bitty most of the time.
We now rejoin our heroes as they find themselves in the stress of everyday life with cirrhosis.
I yelled at a bag of quinoa in the grocery store the other day for being smug. It knows it's trendy.
I sobbed for 20 minutes this morning because my toast was too crispy. I took it as a sign from the universe that I am unworthy of toast for breakfast.
I yelled at my dog for looking at me sideways. Then I apologized with a sonnet. Thou art as lovely as a poodle on a...
Goodbye.
I rage quit Netflix because it asked, "Are you still watching?" Yes, Netflix, I'm still watching my life fall apart. Thank you.
I watched a dog food commercial and wept. The dog was so loved. I just want to be that dog man, cuddled and kisses and food.
I lost one sock and mourned it like a fallen comrade. I held a vigil. There were candles.
All right.
Another great one.
Another one. Yeah, that's always fun. Soap operas are great. So we've decided that, as you can tell, humor really helps us. You know, it keeps perspective. It keeps us kind of in a positive frame of mind. And, you know, you do all kinds of things with that, with humor. I don't, and that doesn't mean just being funny or attempting to be funny. What it means really is even like looking at the world and seeing the humor in the world and being willing to do that.
I went to get a paracentesis last week and how you doing? Well, I think I've been a little bit better than I am now, but, you know, I'm not doing too bad. You know, I'm really into, and you have to be a strong person for this, is self-deprecation.
Yes.
You have to have super great confidence in yourself to bust on yourself.
But it's one of the, it's a great conversation breaker. It's a great way to help people feel more comfortable, help make the situation not be as tense.
That's
you're absolutely
not a walrus. That's my wife.
Exactly. You know, and so it can take the context of a lot of different kinds of things. You know, I've started listening to all kinds of podcasts. I listen to Ted Danson's. There's this podcast, Staying Alive. Conan's podcast, Conan Needs a Friend. And all of those are funny. All of those are looking at the world in humorous ways. Even though what they talk about, kind of like what we attempt to do here, even though what they talk about is, you know, it's kind of serious and heavy in a way. It's just sort of keeping that little bit of perspective that makes so that it's not just completely overwhelming.
I don't listen to Conan's podcast, but he does do videos of them on YouTube.
Yes.
Or segments. And who he's interviewing. Yeah. And watched one with Walter Goggins, and I literally almost couldn't stop myself from peeing on myself. Because it was brilliant.
Yes. And those things are so important, I think. Honestly, as we've talked about, I think they're important really for us in general life. But so many times it's easy to get out of that habit. It's easy to let your life fall into other things. And when you have a chronic illness, it becomes even more important to not do that, to try to find something. For Will and I, it's humor. You know, for other people, it can be other different things. Honestly, we're going to talk a lot on this podcast about things in life that help us with this. Music, as a matter of fact, Will and I are already planning our next episode, and it's probably going to, it is going to be on music. We're going to talk about music that's inspirational and spiritual and uplifting and what helps us get through. You go and you find those things, and that's what's ultimately really important, because it's about your self-esteem. It's about how you view yourself, and you can't let the chronic illness cause you to have a worse view of yourself. And that's really hard, especially if you already don't have a good view of yourself. If you're already having self-esteem problems or whatever, then it can be, you know, even bigger compounding. It affects your confidence.
There are only two answers to the question. Whatever the question is, yes or no.
Yep.
How's something going to turn out? Well, it could turn out good. It could turn out bad. If you don't take the chance towards the good, then it's just going to be the bad. It's like the old baseball slang. You can't steal second with your foot on first.
Yes.
You have to be motivated and wanting to move forward.
Yes. And
I hope you would not choose the going backwards.
Yes. And, you know, because sometimes that's easier. It feels like it's just way easier to kind of give up and, you know, give in and to not keep pushing forward, even though, you know, you feel tired or you feel exhausted or you get irritated or you get annoyed. You gotta push through. Or you'll succumb to it. You'll end up developing unhealthy habits. You know, and as we all know, mental health is a domino effect. I mean, once they start falling in a bad, negative way, it's really hard to stop them.
Very hard.
And, you know, honestly, we haven't even touched on this yet at all in this episode, and it's huge, just how all of this ends up then affecting your relationships with other people, you know, with spouses and children and girlfriends and friends and colleagues and, for me, clients. You know, my job, I deal directly, interface a lot with clients, and, you know, it's vitally important that I not let myself get annoyed and freaked out and upset and whatever, because the client doesn't have any idea that I'm dealing with a chronic illness. And so, it's something that if you allow the dominoes to start falling,
Can I go back a second?
Oh, sure.
Well, talking about intimacy and relationships, my sweetie was my high school sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
And we reconnected about 11 years ago. This is a very serious woman. She's a serious businesswoman. She's she may not tell me all the time that she loves me, but I know she does. And since I have gotten sick like this, her mind works overtime to what can I do for Will? How can I make Will, you know, what can we do to make Will comfortable, get him to the right doctors and all of that. And y'all see what a wonka wonka Fozzie Bear I am. She is not. I have the complete opposite in my life. But she is so serious and so focused, and she's exactly what I needed in my life. Now, I hope this and wish this to all of y'all. But it's not easy. It's not easy because as we're getting, you know, see here, we get down here and it's, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, she and I are the same way, though. We would help a bazillion people, but we don't want to be a burden to anybody.
Yes, I was just about to say that, Will, because all of this ends up leading to feelings of guilt, feelings of being a burden. You know, we haven't talked necessarily too much about this, but the actual process of a liver transplant is hugely invasive. It's going to take up, you know, 3-4 months of mine and Will's life. And when I say take it up, I mean consume it. Like, there will be nothing else except for dealing with recovering from transplant surgery for like 3 months. And you need help during that period of time. And, you know, a large bulk of that help a lot of times ends up falling to one person or a couple of different people. And, you know, for me, I know I've already, and I'm just at the beginning, I've already, have been like, oh my God, I can't, what am I asking? I'm asking these people to give up so much and to do so much for me.
And these people who would, excuse the expression, you know, cross hell and back to do it for you.
Yes.
You know, and when I can't do something for myself, it drives me crazy. Now, I admit there are times that I'm like, oh, to my sister something, oh, would you get me a drink or something like that? Because I just
That's not the same.
Well, no. But when it actually comes down to somebody needing to do something for me, like my roommate helps with the bandages and stuff like that for the hose I have in my back. And he doesn't even bat an eye. He's been my best friend for 40 years, doesn't bat an eye. My guardian angels don't bat an eye. My sister.
Right. And you think about that. What you think about like that, the care he's helping you, how, you know, that's a big ask. That's pretty intimate. That's, you know, asking him to kind of deal with your body. And, you know, as we've mentioned, liver disease is gross. And, you know, it's a lot. And so you can really feel guilty about that if you allow yourself. And you, for me, I have to, you know, remind myself to that I'm asking a lot of folks, but, and I have to trust people to tell me what they can and can't do. And when they tell me that they're able to, then I have to then not feel guilty about that because.
Well, I see it as I've always used this when people go, oh, I don't celebrate my birthday. I don't celebrate my birthday. I don't. Your birthday's not for you to celebrate for the most part. It's for your friends to celebrate that you are here, you know, that you were born, and they want to do that.
They want to be with you. Exactly.
They want to be with you. So, you know, sometimes you might want to scale it back a little bit, depending on your whatever. This is not a full-fledged running out, you know, but I'm saying your friends want to help you. They love you. You know, they show love in many different ways, but but your friends want to be there for you. So the guilt is in my mind, and this is just me speaking, just a little obstacle in the way. So it may not be easy to get over. It may be real easy to get over, you know, but it's something. It's like what I mentioned earlier about the steamroller, you know, this is coming. It's like a blizzard or a hurricane with a category 5. What you gonna do? Because it ain't changing path.
Right. And that's part of the Zen thing that we've been talking about too, which is, you know, the stuff is coming and you know you got to deal with it, but to fight it, to try to get pissed off at it, to whatever, all of those kinds of, to hold resentment with it is counterproductive at best.
Exactly. And now, Scott and I are not doctors. We're the ones going through this.
You're not a doctor, Will? Jeez, I thought you were a doctor this whole time.
Hey, I played one on television one time.
Oh, yeah, see? See?
Oh, see? Well, I'm with you. we're not doctors. We're telling you how we get through the day and what we have noticed. And when were you diagnosed?
April of this year.
Uh-huh. And I was diagnosed in February of this year.
Yeah.
So this is how we deal with it. There's nothing we can do, you know, doctor's appointments and laughing.
Yeah. Doctor's appointments, listen to what the doctors say, take their advice, and make the life adjustments as best we can. And know that it's a process. It's a learning curve. It's a process. You know, some of the things that we're talking about, you know, don't happen overnight. They, you know, you're not going to just flip a switch and suddenly change your habits. Yeah. Well, and change your habits or change your attitude. You know, it's a process.
Well, they say something like 27 days of repetitiveness.
Yes.
Will make something a habit.
Gets you into the mindset of being able to kind of do it routinely without necessarily having to think about it or make yourself. Yes.
I was about to say, since we went through the guilt and, you know, people afraid of being a burden, you know, the expectations and realities of patient caregiver roles, you know?
Right.
A lot of people don't know what that, we've kind of touched on it.
Right.
But we haven't gotten into it.
Right. Really, what?
I'll let you explain further, doctor.
Oh, well, no, not a doctor. Well, and honestly, I'll touch on it a little bit briefly here, but as I was thinking, honestly, Will, it might be an episode we sort of talk about. We talk about caregivers just in general.
Oh, yeah.
And what it's like to be a patient, because the thing that gets dangerous or the trap to fall into, I guess, is that you can get into narrow thinking and you can allow yourself to only think of yourself as a patient or to only think of yourself as a caregiver. And we are human beings. We're complex. We have, and just because we're dealing with a chronic illness, whether as a patient or as the caregiver, it doesn't change who we are, you know, on a core level. We still come with a life that we've had. I'm, you know, 57 years old. I come from a whole life. I come from 57 years of baggage and stuff I'm bringing along with it. And so.
And when I was your age, I was older.
Get off my lawn.
We had to walk 5 miles uphill in the snow.
Both ways. Yes.
I'm so old, my social security number is 2.
Two. Oh, well, two. I'm so old, mine's 1.
Oh, you got me beat there. I'll go back to my cave and club my girlfriend. Wait a minute,
no.
Don't take that out of place, people. Make
don't
it a cave
take that out
joke.
Of place.
Make it all a right. caveman joke.
Before we now move on to our final monologue segment, so have you ever dramatically misinterpreted a symptom or written a sonnet to your spleen? So if you have, send us your liver let die moments or cirrhotic monologues, as if you want to call them that. Go to ohmyliver.com/ohmyliver and subscribe. It's free. Send us a message and send us what your particular thing is, and we'll read it with the theatrical gravitas that it deserves.
And bonus points if you include a fog-induced haiku.
Oh, absolutely. Those are like big-time bonus points. Cool. See you next segment. Welcome, dear listeners, to a sacred space where liver enzymes meet literary angst, where bile flows like poetry and fatigue is but a metaphor for the human condition.
Tonight, we just don't talk about cirrhosis. We soliloquize. We lament. We rage. We whisper sweet nothings to our spleen.
This is the Cirrhotic Monologues, a segment where we channel our inner Blanche DuBois, Hamlet, and occasionally Patti LuPone to give voice to the emotional chaos of chronic illness.
Because when your liver is dramatic, you might as well be too.
Prepare for tales of bloating and betrayal, of enzymes and existential dread. And remember, all the world's a stage, especially the exam room.
I dreamed a dream of days gone by, when liver tests were not alarming. I drank with joy, not wondering why. My spleen was swollen and disarming.
We now join Grandpa from his parlor as he laments on the fact that you can't take it with you.
Well, liver, here we are again. I'd like to say thanks once more for everything you've done for me. The good years, the questionable tequila decisions, and that one time you processed gas station sushi without a complaint. Things seem to be going along fine. The meds are mostly working. The brain fog only lasts until mid-morning, and I haven't cried in the produce aisle all week. Of course, the bloating came back, but that was because of the enchiladas, not you. We've all got our coping mechanisms. Mine involve lavender candles and yelling at my lab results. And as far as anything else is concerned, well, I'll leave it to you and the gastroenterologist. Thank you, liver. You're doing your best. And frankly, so am I.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from pill to pill to the last syllable of prescribed time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to bloated bellies and brain fog. He once cured accents. Now he seeks a cure for cirrhosis. Please welcome the man who believes the rain in Spain should come with a chaser. Professor Higgins, live from the liver.
Liver, you are to remain here for the next 6 months learning how to behave properly, like an organ in a moderately functioning digestive system. And if you are good and do whatever you are told, that is, metabolize medications, regulate bile, and refrain from spontaneous inflammation, you shall reside in a proper torso. Be nourished with low-sodium meals and receive the occasional peppermint tea. But if you are naughty and idle, if you insist on swelling, aching, or producing enzymes with reckless abandon, you shall be banished to the lower quadrant, amongst the black beetles of fatigue and fog, and walloped by Nurse Pierce with a fiber supplement. Now, at the end of those 6 months, you shall be taken to a hepatologist office in a wheelchair, beautifully dressed in compression socks and optimism. If the attending physician discovers you are not well-behaved liver, you shall be sent to the imaging lab, where your dignity will be scanned and your gallbladder interrogated. But if you are not found out, if you pass as a semi-functional organ, you shall receive a celebratory pudding cup and a prescription refill to start life anew as a respected member of the gastrointestinal community. If you refuse this offer, you will be a most ungrateful, wicked organ, and the angels shall weep for you and possibly fax your labs to the wrong clinic. Now, are you satisfied?
That's fun.
We just keep getting better and better there, don't we?
Yeah, through the whole episode, man.
I thought the first one was great, but man, I am not a thespian.
Wait till you see what we've got planned for even further episodes. I think we're going to keep coming up with some good stuff, hopefully, fingers crossed. So we've thrown a lot of stuff at you today. Like, you know, we're dealing with a lot, and it can really be overwhelming. And if you let it, it'll domino and get overwhelming. And I guess that's really kind of really been our point today, Will, right? It's been, you know, try to work hard at finding those things in your life that can uplift you.
Exactly.
Knowing that, and you know, you're – go ahead.
I was going to say, and if you just need to drop somebody a message, drop us a message.
Yes.
We are always here.
And well, that goes to whether you're dealing with a chronic illness or not. Honestly, if you just want to talk in general for yourself or just sort of talk with us, just sort of like inquire with us about life and things.
There are a few social issues out there that people don't feel comfortable and feel berated and not loved and not equal.
Exactly.
We're here, man.
Yes.
Always.
Yes. And so, you know, that's been really kind of, I guess, the primary focus and point of this episode is to, you know that you have obstacles and adversity and life has given us challenges, but the way that we deal with them is almost as important, if not maybe even more important, as how you deal with them, what you do to deal with them. And we can actively do things in our lives to support ourselves to sort of do that. I mean, honestly, for me, this is all, it feels like I'm in the middle of a play or a movie, some sort of like crazy thriller or action movie. And like, you just suddenly get swept up in this momentum.
I don't know. I feel like I'm in a movie where I'm going to wake up in a bathtub with two slits in my side and my liver and kidneys are gone.
Oh God.
Just kidding.
It is a thing. And you know, you kind of got to deal with that up and down, and know that you're not alone. First of all, you at least have Will and I, and frankly, you have probably a lot more people in your life than you really think. And B, you can do it. You know, we all have the power in ourselves to deal with our lives. And it's just a matter of sticking to it and keeping ourselves on track and being willing to accept the changes and adjust with them.
I had a professor in college that always said the answer to every question is knowing where to find the answer.
Yes, that is very true. That is so, very, very, very
true. You know, there's an answer to everything. There is comfort and love around you. And I am seeing it tremendously, not necessarily with my illness, but with, you know, the whole community coming out to help and be kind and
right and support you. Yeah. Yeah. I find the community amazing. It's just, it never ceases to amaze me how awesome a community will come together and support each other. It's wonderful. It is the thing that helps keep me, you know, having a little bit of faith in humanity. Is when, because I see it happen and it just happens, you know, regardless of the madness and chaos in the world that's around, people still, respond in this kind of way. And I find that wonderfully, wonderfully, wonderfully positive.
No, I'm saying in this day and time, if you watch, and I hate using this phrase, but forgive me, Main Street News. And I mean corporate news, you know, mm-hmm. You hear about all the gunky in the world and all of that, but it's not that hard to walk out your front door and see the love.
Right.
And so while it's important to like to go on, I'm sorry.
No. I was just going to say it's important, of course, to stay informed and keep knowing what's in the world, but you can't let it consume you. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. Please continue.
Oh, no, because I used to be a big, big news hound till I got sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, okay, I'll watch some and I'll keep, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'll see what's going on in the world with major issues, or in America with major issues, not stupid issues, you know?
Right.
So, totally. Yeah. And so now I... You know, that's not my thing. My favorite episode on YouTube is called The Hoof GP. And it's a guy that goes around and trims cow's hooves in Scotland.
That's so great, man. You can find everything
but
on YouTube.
But also, he's got a good backstory to his life and how he turned things around and all of that. But right. Yeah, I'm becoming an old man when I'm watching a guy, you know, trim the hooves of cows.
totally.
Scotland.
You know, well, we got to embrace who we are, buddy. We got to embrace it.
Well, it shows the love, you know. It's not something I'm looking at to, you know,
exactly.
Well, that's all.
Exactly. So we're going to keep this conversation going in very much the similar kind of way. You know, we're going to keep, throughout these episodes, we're going to keep talking about our challenges, of course, but we're gonna really try to focus on is then the things that inspires us to get through those challenges, and helps us and motivates us and supports us. So our next episode, I think we've already mentioned, we're gonna be delving into the world of music and talking about how music has influenced our lives, the kinds of music that we find comforting and uplifting and that motivates us and artists and
comforts us and all of that.
Exactly. And so very much like this was about with talking about mental health and emotions, we're going to really kind of then zero in a little bit on some of the things that help us get through. And so, you know, that's kind of what we got coming up in our next episode. So we hope you'll stay tuned. And as I said, please be patient with us. We will get them out as quickly as we can. Our plan is, of course, for, you know, weekly-ish. But as Will has
talked about. He's only human.
Right. We are of course, dealing with a chronic illness. And so things come up. And frankly, they come up a little more often than they might for just the average bear.
There may be times that I may not be on here because I may be in the hospital.
Well, sure. And now, honestly, that could be for, unfortunately, really could be for both of us. If that ever happens, one of us may do a solo episode to be able to
update people,
keep people informed, and talk a little bit about things that are happening and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, yes, that's certainly
I just
a possibility.
To emphasize how serious this is for me, not so much Scott. You know, from February till the end of September, I was in and out of the hospital.
Yeah, multiple, several times, weren't you?
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, the one hospital, same network, same hospital company, to get the drainage, they wanted me to be admitted to the hospital.
Yeah.
But if I go 10 miles down the road to another one of their hospitals, there's a couple of days a week that if I need to, I can go in, they can do the procedure, and I can go home. So.
Yeah, that's procedurally and everything. That's a much more supportive and better and easier.
Yeah.
With all that being said, so Will, you always have a quote for us, and I believe this week is no exception, of course. So, lay that quote on us, brother.
All right. This is from, it's one of my favorite quotes ever. It's from the award-winning children's book, Charlotte's Web.
One of mine, too. It's fantastic.
Oh, my mom bought me this one as soon as she thought I could read it. She didn't worry about my age.
Yeah.
As soon as I could read it, she bought it. But it's, why did you do all this for me? He asked. I didn't deserve it. I've never done anything for you. You have been my friend, replied Charlotte. That in itself is a tremendous thing.
Yes. And I feel blessed and fortunate beyond the stars that I have the people in my life that I have, Will, all the people that are surrounding me now. It is so wonderfully comforting in a time that is troubling and many times not very comforting. And so, Will, that is an amazing quote. Thank you, buddy.
I do my best.
Yeah. All right. Well, that being said, I think it's time for us to say bye. Cirrhosis is serious, but laughter is a legitimate coping mechanism, right up there with therapy, medication, and yelling into a pillow.
Or writing a musical called Les Miserables, the cirrhotic edition.
Until next time, hydrate, moisturize, and remember, drama belongs on stage, not in your symptom tracker.
This has been Oh My Liver!
Where the bile is real, but the tears are theatrical. Cue the curtain and cue the calm. May you go in peace and low sodium. ¶¶